Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month med plus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
News Talk Saturday.
Joining me in the studio to look at this weekend's papers. They're both look dry, but they've been battled through the elements over the last few days. So we'll have here on my right, Louisa Meehan, who is from Woodview HRM. She is a HR and dispute resolution expert. And here on my left, not politically aligned in their seating arrangements, is Craig Hughes, who is political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail. Folks, you're very welcome to come into studio. It's been a really tough week for a lot of the country and a lot of parts of the country. Craig, if I can go to you first, you're obviously watching the political world. The politicians, they're going to get it in the neck over what's happened over the last few days. They're going to get it in the neck in Dublin. They're going to get it in the neck in Wexford and lots of other parts. There's lots of stuff about, there's stuff on the way, there's stuff in planning, there's flood defences there and at this stage and all the rest of it. But I don't know. I just get a sense at early stages that this is going to be a big political backlash about the lack of infrastructure to deal with these floods. Is that your sense of it?
Yes. I mean, it's very hard not to be a homeowner or a resident in any of those areas that have been devastated by flooding and wonder why more hasn't been done. And I suppose there's a couple of good pieces in the papers today. I suppose I'm actually struck initially about a really, really excellent piece by Evan Murray in the Irish Independent. And this goes to the heart of what was, you know, was there adequate warnings to the public here? And I was a bit taken aback earlier in the week when Minister for Housing James Brown came out and kind of accused Met Aaron, who report into his department, of course, of withholding information. And there was a bit of eyebrows raised within government about this, and he kind of walked it back a bit after that. But when you read Evan's piece, really excellent piece, it talks about a kind of a rift almost within the elements within Met Aaron. So you have the general forecasters, and then you have a separate unit that was set up back in 2016, the National Flood Forecasting Unit. And there does seem to be a bit of tension between those two. General forecasters, it seems, can't put out a flood warning without consulting the flood specialists, but the general forecasters work on a 24-hour roster. The other cohort don't. When that unit was agreed to be set up in 2016, recruitment didn't start until 2018, and it actually only became operational 6 years later. So I think people will be looking and going, geez, what's going on here? And I do actually think, because when I heard the minister saying they need to come before the Oireachtas, I was thinking, hold on a second, you're the boss, you should be dealing with this. And there is an element of that. But at the same time, I think there is much more to be probed here about why Met Aaron isn't functioning properly as a whole with these two units working collaboratively together. And because I know talking from some political staffers in Leinster House, they were saying, okay, we had this yellow warning, but you know that really didn't take account of where the water table was, you know, so they felt like the whole...
But if I was a householder, I'd be saying, yes, I'd like to have more prompt warnings, but the thing I'd really like is that it didn't happen in the first place and I had a flood effect. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's that infrastructure piece as well.
And that is there, okay, but then look at Redfarnham, really heavily impacted by the floods. And what delayed the project there was a judicial review taken by a local environmental group. So, I mean, look, politicians will be held to account on lots of issues, but here you had a local environmental group that really stopped a project that could have been done and dusted by now and helped those people had they not taken that case.
Okay, Louisa, there's a lots of blame being slices of blame cake are being sliced up here and handed out to various people. It's the planners, it's the politicians, it's Met Aaron and their internal organisation. Where's your head at in terms of how we can be better?
Look, I mean, I think ultimately it's the weather, you know, ultimately. And I think if we want to find a solution, we need to step away from the blame game because it doesn't help. There's definitely an issue based on the article by Ivana Murray. There definitely seems to be an issue of conflict, differing agendas, stepping on toes, not wanting to sort of take accountability within Met Aaron. That needs to be addressed. It's maybe unintended consequences. They're experts in their field, but it does very much sound like elements within Met Aaron did know that flooding was coming. There's a line in here which talks to the fact that if you're being taken out of your house in a boat, that feels like a red weather warning and not a yellow weather warning. Now, luckily, we weren't impacted personally, but I had to come to Dublin for a meeting on Tuesday, coming up the N11. And I mean, I knew that there had been flooding, but I wasn't paying a lot of attention because busy, kids, all the rest. Got in the car, came so far up, like the N11 was basically closed. Then I tried to go up to the mountains and I was like, I got up a bit. I stopped on the side of the road and I was like, this is really, really dangerous. What am I doing? Turned around, went home and did the call over Teams or whatever it was. Had we had a red weather warning, most of the cars that were on that L11 on Tuesday would have stayed at home. And you would have only had essential workers going into work. And that would have made it easier for the emergency services to do what they needed to do. You know, we absolutely knew the volume of rain that's coming. And everybody has said that Metairn did a very, very good job at predicting the volume of rain. And it was relatively accurate. The issue is that, as you said, we didn't have the proper flood defences. There's lots of historical reasons for that. It isn't about money. I do think it is far more to do with a will to do it.
Well, my bugbear is the fact that houses that were built a year or two ago, because the old line trotted out used to be, look, a lot of houses were built on floodplains years ago. What can you do? It's a legacy issue. Sorry about that. But houses that are literally freshly constructed are also getting flooded out. So what happened, Craig, with the planning for those is what I would be concerned about.
Yeah.
The other one is in your own paper, and the Mail, a town has been flooded out 16 times since 2001. I mean, when does that prompt action?
Yeah, I think the government, I know Kevin Boxham-Moran was out, the OPW minister, was out visiting towns this week and met with kind of very angry responses. And it's, if you're living in those areas that are continuously flooding and you're not getting the adequate flood defences, I think you're going to be very, very angry with your local government representatives and national government representatives, and patience will be wearing very thin.
Also, for this government, but also others that may come in future, we're already pretty hacked off about infrastructure anyway. Mm. A lot of us are worried about transport. There's the whole water piece, as in the water system, the sewage. So it's not as if the government has a strong story to tell in the first place in this end. This is just coming on top. So they already are on the back foot across a whole range of infrastructural issues.
They are, but I do get the sense that there is about to be a significant shift on that, on the back of the Accelerating Infrastructure Task Force and the emergency powers that is going to bring. For example, it'll allow for critical infrastructure to have emergency powers to go to the top of the queue when dealing with all state agencies and really kind of fast track a lot of these projects. Well, look, it sounds very good. I'm normally a cynic. This does sound like...
What about a government department, a new government department for emergency preparedness?
Well, I know
environment does stuff and the local authority, but...
Yeah, but I mean, so the Department of Public Expenditure also covers infrastructure as well. That got tacked on to that. So it is the Lime Minister there, Jack Chambers, who brought forward this accelerating infrastructure task force. And it has actually been moving at pace in terms of how quickly government works. And I do expect to see significant shifts there in the first half of this year.
I think, you know, just going in to say one good thing for the government, for businesses
only the
out
one,
there.
Right?
Only the one. But Enterprise Minister Peter Burke has come out, and the government have very quickly looked at the grants and the supports that are in place for businesses. So what used to be in place was for small businesses up to 20 staff, there was up to 20,000 in funding. That is now increased to businesses for up to 50 staff, which is a lot much larger size business, and where they don't have flood insurance, they can get up to 100,000 in funding through the Department of Enterprise under the Emergency Humanitarian Flooding Scheme. It's not going to fix the problem.
No, but at least helped. We have, yes, and we're absolutely drowning in cash, no pun intended, at the moment. So at least the checks can be written and given to the people. Let me move away from the weather, Craig, and move on to sort of the, I suppose, church politics, which is former President Mary McAleese. I see a headline using the word rancid, which is not a word you see too often in newspaper headlines. And she's talking about the institutional church, the bishops still not doing enough to change what's happening within the church and so on. I mean, she still gets a lot of coverage. She's very visible. She's been in this area for quite a while. So this is, in some senses, not new, but just the language is quite strong.
It is strong. She has been fighting this battle for a long time. She's spoken a lot about her faith and her desires to change the church, to progress, to have women deacons. But she has continually been facing a brick wall when it comes to the Catholic Church, and I note that she said, you know, she says it's essentially, she says it's rancid and needs to be updated. This is the way they relate to women, and that that it isn't going to happen with a tiny and increasingly small number of celibate male ordained bishops. And she also interestingly talks about Pope Leo, who she says is no champion of women, and that's tragic. And, you know, I think the church has been a cold place for women for an awful long time. And I guess I'm surprised in some regards that people continue to think that they can change it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is centrally controlled. There's nothing the Irish hierarchy can do, Louisa. But I think it's very interesting what she says here is that she calls the current Pope a stopgap and he's not a serious reformer. Well, based on his age, he's going to be there as a stopgap for quite a while.
For a while,
so
for sure.
she is sort of, you know, trying to keep back the waves here a little bit in the sense that this is not an institution that changes, as Craig says, very rapidly. So
no,
it could be waiting a while.
It doesn't change quickly. And I think, you know, one of the really big challenges here is that, you know, she's advocating for women to have equal power within the church to men, really, ultimately. But it is entirely controlled by men. You know, the Pope, all of the bishops, all of the archbishops, the whole shebang. And so that's a really, that's an uphill battle. You know, it's very difficult to have an institution like a church, which is only, you know, in its leadership, it is only represented by half of the population it serves. Because how can it then fully serve that population in a way that is inclusive without hearing the voice of those individuals at the leadership table? It's impossible.
But the strange thing is that Mary McAleese, she wants to reform the church and understand that she's a very powerful advocate for doing that. But she doesn't seem to reach a stage where she kind of goes, I've had it. You know, in other words, like, this is unreformable. So yeah, she keeps chipping away, which is kind of interesting.
Because her religion must be very, very important to her. And it is to many, many people out there, many women, many men, whether it's the Catholic religion or others. And so therefore, I think, like, I have a lot of respect for somebody to keep trying to make change, even in a world where they know that it's highly unlikely that what they're doing is going to have a significant impact in the short term. It might take 50 years. She may never see the change. But without people like her standing up and saying, we need this, it's never going to happen.
So it's kind of like a little crack in the glass, but each of them come together eventually over the decade. Let me move you on to something entirely different, which is social media. Craig, you have it on the front of your own newspaper. Mm. Ban on under 16s could be very popular. It is popular. You've done a poll in your paper. It's found that there's nearly 3 in 4 people would support it. Maybe to some degree, not a surprise. Of course, parents can take action themselves. They don't have to wait for a state ban. But nevertheless, it seems it's kind of showing and indicating a certain drift and a certain direction we're going in on the back of the Australian changes.
Yeah, and I interviewed Minister Patrick O'Donovan before Christmas on his plans to introduce reforms in this sector. I remain to be convinced that they will work. Essentially, what he wants to do is mandate everyone in the country to have a government ID in a kind of digital wallet. So you or I would have to download this in order to get on to any of the social media platforms. Now, I think there's going to be big concerns from for people in the privacy world here saying, like, do you really want the government to have any involvement in you getting on the internet? And then I also think that, you know, given that we can use a VPN to watch things that are already geo-blocked, would that not be a very simple workaround for kids to use as well?
They would fire back to say, just because people can get around the thing doesn't mean we shouldn't do anything.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, when we see the current situation now, we have to accept that it isn't sustainable and we have to do something. So, but I also wonder as well, we are in a very privileged position in some sense that we laws that we introduced could have meaningful effect because these companies are based.
I was going to ask you that. The fact that we weren't first in the line like in Australia were, and the UK are probably going to be ahead of us. Do you think that is somewhat conditioned by the fact that a lot of these companies have European headquarters in Dublin?
Yes, but if you look actually, and back this also relates back to Minister O'Donovan, who accepted that he didn't progress with a Netflix levy here, in part because of the Trump administration. Now, he also said there was other reasons for not wanting to tax, put additional tax on households here. But I think it would create a new challenge if you're going to start putting new regulation and potentially penalties on Elon Musk's company, X, formerly Twitter, who, of course, is a close confidant of Donald Trump. So there, that's the realpolitik. And I think there would be, I think it would lead to further strained relations between Ireland and the US, which the government has shown they aren't eager to engage with.
Yeah, so it's not a free hit. You know, there are yeah. things to be considered. Mm. Louisa, we're talking about the Nudify apps. We're talking about Grok. We're talking about really deplorable stuff, really, to be honest.
Yep.
I mean, children being undressed online. I mean, that's what has brought this story to the current yep. level it's at. Do you think everyone, parents, civic society, has just reached a kind of a breaking point and are just saying, do something now, it has to be done? Or is it more subtle, as Craig says?
I think parents certainly, and women want something done. At the end of the day, you know, when we talk about the nudifying of individuals, the sexualization of individuals on social media, it is very predominantly women and children that are impacted by that. We need to prioritize protecting children first, and there should be the most strict possible regulations, rules in place to protect children from being nudified, sexualized, harassed either by adults or being able to access it themselves through online platforms. The reality is, and we were chatting about this beforehand, you know, where I struggle is I don't really see a huge value in the government trying to come up with the technical solutions or ideas behind how that works. The technical companies, the technology companies,
force them to come up with it. Yeah.
They know how to do this. They can do this. Now, this isn't complicated.
This is banned. You come up with the fix.
Fix it.
And that's,
exactly.
That's what Australia did. So the difference between what Ireland wanted to do and what Australia have done is Australia have legislated that the companies have to take reasonable steps to ensure under 16 aren't on their platforms. Yeah.
Craig, I want to ask you about your year ahead personally, right? One of the big ones is going to be the EU presidency in the second half of the year. Presumably you're going to be attending all these big EU meetings. He's going to have a great time. He's going to be lunching for Ireland here, Craig. Yes. Is going to be, right? But the amount of drama, but also deep concern about these drone attacks possibly ramping up from the summer onwards. We know the war in Ukraine. We know there's a possible peace breaking out there, but we're still waiting for the term. So Russia still has an interest in possibly disrupting this EU presidency with Macron coming in and Maloney and all the rest of it. So we're hearing in the Indo, you know, faces increasing drone attacks and MEP is warning. How much concern do you get a sense of from inside government is there about this? Or do they sort of think we'll get there in the summer and we'll have it all sorted by then?
Well, if you look at the visit of President Zelensky, his security had to be supported here by defence, not just by our defence forces, but also by European and UK security agencies, which really showed a failure of our defence capabilities. Now, there had been calls for the drone activity around his plane to be published. We haven't seen that yet, so a bit of scepticism there. But I think one thing is very clear, that our defence capabilities are not adequate. And when you have a country like Denmark having shut down their airports due to drone activity, I think it doesn't bode well
Should I be worried about my summer holidays? To be incredibly parochial, personal, individual, etc. Right? Okay, this is the big story. Finally, Craig, just to stick with you on this, you've got your own story talking about our health service coming under huge staffing pressure. We're drafting in unqualified people into very sensitive diagnostic roles. It seems the health service can't do anything about it because they're just so dependent on getting staff. But I mean, these are very sensitive roles that you're talking about here.
Yeah, so I was reporting this week in the Irish Daily Mail, and will be again in the coming days, about the issue of clinical measurement physiologists being employed in Irish hospitals without having the HSE mandated accreditation from the Irish Institute of Clinical Measurement Physiologists. And these are people who do diagnostic tests like cardiac ultrasounds. They might also be doing tests to measure your swallow. So really serious and invasive tests. And local hospitals in Ireland have been bypassing the rules mandated by national the HSE. It's a really, really serious issue and one that we're going to be continuing to cover in the Irish Daily Mail and Irish Mail on Sunday.
And do you think it's just people have taken their eye off the ball, or is it they're just so dependent on getting people in they have to overlook the exact qualifications?
So there's a shortage in staffing, right? And there has been, you know, if someone comes in from overseas, they might have a degree that is similar, but they have to go through this body, the IICMP, in order to get accreditation. Now, due to the shortages and the timelines involved, hospitals are looking to bypass this to fill these roles. But that doesn't really give assurances to patients who are going in to get these tests. And I think it is a very serious issue that I think we're going to be seeing played out in the Oireachtas in the coming days. Because I know, for example, David Cullinan was urging the Minister for Health, Jennifer Carol McNeill, to get a grip on this. And I wouldn't be surprised if this makes its way before the Oireachtas Health Committee in time.
Now, Louisa, not to sound too sort of sanguine about all this, we have lots of people who've been in education, unqualified teachers and all the rest. So this is a problem that pops up all over the place.
It is. And I think, you know, if you look across the economy, there are lots of areas within it where it is very, very difficult to get the correctly qualified individual or the correct experience. Like even going down to something really, really simple. I know people who work in the restaurant industry, completely different industry, and they've had to go out of Ireland to bring somebody in to wash the pots because they cannot get somebody in this country to do it. We have a skills shortage in some different areas, and we need to look at increasing the education, increasing the ability for individuals to get into these key
jobs. That's a whole other show because it's such a big topic. I'm going to have to leave it there. Melanie Finn, Louisa Meehan from Woodview HRM, and Craig Hughes beside me here, political correspondent with the Irish Daily Mail. Thank you both for coming in this morning.
News Talk Saturday.